Hello, and welcome to Pop DNA, the podcast that explores the historical and literary influences in your favorite works of pop culture.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rhonda.
And this is our third and final episode in our Literature Summer Series.
It's been a great ride.
As well as the final episode of the first season of Pop DNA.
What?
And we are just, it's amazing.
It's bananas.
It's so cool. And today we're discussing the 18th century fairy tale, Beauty and the Beast, or La Belle et la Bête. In French.
It's French. It's okay.
Yeah. And its influence in current popular media. I apologize to French people that I just, that was bad.
We're going to try to pronounce some French words just to give you some warning, and we're probably going to do terribly, but we're going to try. But before we really get started, though, we did want to tell you a little bit about our Patreon. So you lovely listeners know every month we bring you this deep, detailed exploration of a cultural work and its connections to works that came both before and after it. But if you've ever wanted to dive even deeper into these works that we explore, you should become a Patreon subscriber.
Yeah. Every month exclusively for our Patreon subscribers, we will post bonus content that supplements or is on theme for the topic of our main episode for the month. So this month, for example, for our Literature Summer discussion of Beauty and the Beast, we have recorded a commentary for the 2011 film Beastly.
Best movie ever.
Amazing. Which is, of course, a Beauty and the Beast adaptation. And we also have an amazing dramatic reading.
Incredible. Like, it is Oscar worthy.
It's so great. If you need our representation contact number,
if you want to be our agent,
we'll let you know. And it's all on theme for the topic, of course. And every month we'll also post our show notes that I'm reading off of right now. And they're sometimes really fun. We have fun writing them.
Yes. So there are a few different tiers of membership for Patreon members, and it starts out at just $1 a month. Yeah. So it's a great deal.
Yeah.
And this is a really great and fun way to support the show. So if you enjoy us, maybe come join us on Patreon and we can party together.
Woo! So we're back now. It feels like we've been away for a couple hundred years.
Yeah.
Like maybe under an enchantress's curse that turned all our servants into household objects, and we've just learned to love again and broken the curse. Yeah.
So are we the Beast or are we Belle?
I ask myself this every day. I don't know.
But what a coincidence, because that sounds just like Beauty and the Beast.
Oh my goodness.
A fairy tale that was published in 1740 and was written by Gabrielle de Villeneuve in France.
Yay.
Do you like France, Erin?
I love France. Do you like France?
I really liked the crepes. And I really liked the Notre Dame Cathedral. That was pretty cool.
I would love to go to there.
It was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go to there.
I like Nutella. Does that count?
Is that French?
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, okay. I had no idea. Yeah. Anyway, so you know who else is French? Gabrielle Suzanne Barbon de Villeneuve.
Yeah.
And, she was born in Paris in November of 1685. And in 1706, she got married to this guy named Jean-Baptiste Gaillon de Villeneuve.
That's a name.
I've probably totally butchered that.
That's okay.
But he was an aristocrat. So she kind of married into the aristocracy there.
Yeah.
But then within 6 months of her marriage, she requested a separation of the belongings from her husband. But then he ended up passing away just a few years later. So she was a widow at the age of 26.
Wow.
But then it seemed like maybe that, you know, would have been a good thing, you know, to have some independence, but she progressively lost her family fortune and she was forced to seek employment to be able to support herself.
Sure.
Darn, gotta get a job.
No.
Right. So she eventually ended up back in Paris, and there she met, I'm not even going to try with this one, de Crébillon or Crébillon Père.
Sure.
Yeah. A guy. He was a famous playwright at the time.
Cool.
She met him and they kind of had like a thing going on. Oh. And they ended up living together as early as the 1730s.
Okay.
Most likely. And she stayed with him until her death in 1755.
Oh.
And so while she was living in Paris, she kind of made some literary friends there.
Sure.
And that eventually kind of set her on this path toward becoming a writer.
Yeah.
And so she kind of learned about like the popular literature in Paris at the time.
Yeah.
And then her most famous work, La Belle et la Bête.
Yes.
Which means Beauty and the Beast. She wrote that while living in Paris. Okay. And it was published in 1740. And then she died in December of 1755. Hmm. And then, like a year after her death, her original tale was abridged and rewritten and published by another French name, just to warn you, Jean-Marie Le Prince de Beaumont.
Okay.
In 1756. And it was to teach young English girls a moral lesson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So oh, okay. She thought, you know, let's steal this lady's original work and use it to do, you know, this terrible thing.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, because her version was so popular, de Beaumont's version was so popular, she is often referred to as the author of the fairy tale. But her shortened version is the one that's most commonly known today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A newer version was published by Andrew Lang in the Blue Fairy Book.
So
he, in his fairy book series in like the late 19th and early 20th centuries.
Okay.
He had all those books of fairy tales. I actually have the Rainbow Fairy Book.
Oh.
That like collected all the most popular stories from all of those. But it doesn't have Beauty and the Beast in it.
My mom looked through those to find what she was going to name her daughter, me.
Oh.
And she didn't end up going with any of them, but she looked through a bunch. Yeah.
For like a fairy tale name?
Yeah.
That'd be nice. Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of fairy tales, the characters don't really have names.
Right.
A lot of the time. Sometimes.
Yeah.
But anyway. So, you know, if you are familiar with like the Disney version of this fairy tale, then you kind of know the story, but Disney diverges quite a bit from the original.
Uh-huh.
So if we want to, just give you a hopefully quick recap of the original story.
This time, look who isn't doing the recap. I'm not doing it anymore. I'm not good at them. So we're going to listen to
it's
Rhonda.
It's okay.
Oh, no, I'm not.
No, it's okay. So so in the original story, so there's Beauty is a girl who lives with her father. And in the original, she has 6 brothers and 5 sisters.
Wow.
In later versions, she has like progressively fewer siblings.
Sure.
But in the original, it's 12 children. There's 6 sons and 6 daughters. And
wow.
Beauty is the youngest. All the daughters are beautiful, but Beauty is the most beautiful because her name's Beauty.
Good.
Right. And so her father's a merchant. I already said that, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So her dad's
sure.
a merchant.
Yeah.
He's like rich and they're kind of living in luxury. But he... so the story starts when he sends his three like merchant ships to go and like do business or whatever.
The Nina, whatever. The Pinta, and the Santa Maria,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the ships are lost in a storm.
Okay.
And they lose all of their fortune.
Okay.
And so they have to go, they have to leave their fancy house in the city.
Yeah.
And they move out to this little farmhouse in the countryside.
Yeah.
And they have to, you know, like learn how to like make their own food and,
yeah,
and sew their own clothes and everything. And in the original story, all of the sisters are very like snobbish and they don't want to like, they feel like it's beneath them to do all this menial labor.
Sure.
And Beauty is the only one who like kind of takes on that responsibility and like it's like, okay, yeah, I'll do this work, like whatever.
Oh, and she's beautiful on the inside and out. Oh, good.
So like they live out there for I don't know how long. but then the merchant, the father, hears that one of his ships has come back. Like it's been found.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's come back. And so he needs to go back to the city to kind of see if they can like recover some of their wealth.
Yeah.
And kind of take care of that business. So before he leaves for the city, he asks all of his children what gift they want him to bring back for them from the city.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so all of the sisters say things like, I want a fancy dress, or okay, I want, you know, a jeweled necklace and sure, things like that.
Yeah.
But all Beauty asks for is a single rose because she wants to grow roses.
Yeah.
So the merchant, he goes back and, you know, to the city, and he finds that even though that ship has come back, all of that wealth has to go toward paying all of his debts. Okay. So they're really not any better off than they were before.
Sure.
So he isn't going to be able to get all of these gifts for his children, unfortunately. Yeah. So then while he's returning back to the country, he is lost in like a snowstorm, which is what's happening right now.
We're watching the Disney
animated Beauty and the Beast right now. And it's this point in the story. So he gets lost in the woods and he, comes upon this castle in the middle of nowhere. And so he goes inside and there's no one around. So he goes in, and he finds, like just this like feast on the table, and he's like, oh, well, I mean,
well, I guess
I might as well eat. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. So he eats and then he like goes to sleep, and the next morning, he's about to leave and he sees a rose garden outside and he remembers, oh yeah, Beauty just wanted a rose. I can get her a rose.
I can get
her. Yeah. So sure, he picks a rose, but as soon as he picks the rose,
oh, no,
this like super scary beast jumps out at him and is like, no,
how dare you steal my roses?
Which honestly, I mean, I'd be angry.
Yeah. I mean, the beast has like very carefully tended
his rose garden
and this guy is just going to take one after he like fed him and like,
come on,
let him sleep in his house. Okay. So... so the beast is like, I'm gonna kill you for stealing my flower, and
that escalated quickly.
Right. And then the merchant tells him, like, I just wanted to get this for my daughter, like it's all she wanted, it's all I can, you know, it's all I can bring her. And so the beast agrees to let him live and go give the rose to his daughter, but he has to bring one of his daughters back to the castle to live there.
Oh, geez.
In exchange for his life. So, right. So he goes, so he's like, obviously the merchant is like, that's terrible, but yeah, I guess like, I'll agree to that. And maybe hopefully I can get out of it at some point. Right. That's
right, kind
of what he's thinking. I mean, subtext.
Yeah. like, I won't actually bring her.
Right.
She got lost in the mail. It's not.
So he goes on his way. He returns home. He gives Beauty the rose. And then he tells his children about what happened. And so he says... So in the original story, there are brothers, and they say that they'll go to the castle and fight the beast.
Okay.
And they'll be like, we'll take care of this, Dad. Don't worry. and then, of course, the older daughters who are like the kind of wealthy, you know, they're kind of like spoiled. They're like, we're not going to do that.
Yeah.
They're not going to, you know, go. And so... So the merchant, eventually he says to all of his children, no, like you're not going there.
Yeah.
I'll go back. It's fine. But Beauty decides that she is going to save them all, and she's going to go to the castle.
Okay.
So she goes there, and, you know, she lives in the castle for a while. The Beast provides her with, like, food and clothing, and she can go anywhere she wants in the castle. And,
okay.
And, you know, she, basically she's, like, living in luxury here. And so every night, so actually in the original story, every night the Beast asks Beauty to sleep with him.
Aww.
Yeah. So that was changed in later versions. He asks her to marry him every night. Yeah. It's
okay.
Yeah. This France was weird in the 18th century. Yikes. Just let me. Yeah. Okay. so, but of course she like refuses every time. And then, so like, I don't know how long she lives there, but she kind of like explores the castle. So in Villeneuve's original version of the story, it's like almost novel length. So there's a lot of description of Belle or Belle Beauty, like it's Belle in French, like exploring the castle and finding like all of these enchanted rooms and enchanted objects. And then she comes across like animals that are the servants. So like it's like the servants have been turned into animals or or something like that. So she's living there. She has pretty much everything she wants. But eventually she gets homesick and she wants to see her family again. So she like begs the Beast to let her go see her family. And he says that she can, but she has to return, in different versions, it's different amounts of time.
Yeah.
In the original version, she has to return exactly 2 months later. So she agrees. He says that if, you know, it takes her longer, then like he will die. So she goes home and visits with her family, and of course, they try to convince her, like, not to go back. They're like, what are we going to do? Like, the Beast will be dead. Like, it's fine.
It's fine.
but when the 2 months have passed, she has a dream that the Beast is dying all alone in the castle. And she realizes that, you know, she loves him. So she has to go back. So she goes back to the castle and she sees that the Beast is actually dying. And so like she realizes she loves him. And so like in some versions of the story, like she says, like right then she says, I love you. And then like the Beast, you know, turns back into the prince, like right at that moment. But in the original story, there's a little bit more to it than that. So she gets him water from a nearby spring, which I guess is like enchanted water.
Okay.
And she gives him that. And then he is transformed into the prince.
Yeah, sure.
And then this fairy shows up, who, she had seen before in her dreams, along with, this woman that she doesn't know.
Okay.
And the woman turns out to be the prince's mother.
Okay.
And they're like, and the prince and Beauty are like, yeah, we're going to get married. But the mother is like disappointed because, because she assumes that Beauty is not of noble birth. So how could she marry a prince?
Okay.
No, this is 1740.
Yeah, okay.
So the fairy tells the mother that Beauty is actually, this is so convenient, is actually her niece.
Oh.
And her real father is the queen's brother.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's actually like of royal birth or noble birth or whatever.
Phew, I was worried.
So like, once that is settled, the prince tells her, you know, everything that happened and like how he became the Beast and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so the curse was that only by finding true love, despite his ugliness, could the curse be broken. And he and Beauty are married and they live happily ever after together. That was a super long story recap.
It was lovely.
I'm sorry.
No, it was really good. I didn't know a bunch of these nuances of the original.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. Like, if you, there are some pretty good English translations of it if you want to read it. Yeah, but it's like, it is like almost novel length, like I said, and it's you know, it goes like a lot into like the beast's backstory, and it it delves into like Beauty's family's backstory.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. And then it's, what's interesting is that it kind of started out as like this novel length story and was like gradually like made shorter and shorter and shorter.
Right. Right.
Like the story that we recognize today. But then what a lot of current authors have done is they've taken like the shortened version of the story and they've embellished it into like a novel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that's happened. Yeah. And I am a sucker for a Beauty and the Beast retelling in novel form. So
in novel. Yes. How novel.
Yeah. Well, do we want to learn a little bit about the story influences?
Yeah.
So I mentioned that Villeneuve was, she kind of like got involved in that like literary scene in Paris.
Yeah, yeah.
So she was influenced. Actually, one of her influences was Charles Perrault, who wrote, of course, the most, well, one of the famous versions of Cinderella
in
the late 17th century. And she was also influenced by the style of 17th century novels, because it is, like I said, very long. so the beast in the story, the word bête for beast actually has a double meaning in French. So it means like a literal beast, like an animal, but it also means lacking intelligence.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
So she was really influenced by authors of the Preciosity movement, which is in the late 17th century. So a little bit before she was writing. But it was this like squad of like educated and intellectual ladies started playing this parlor game where they would retell a popular fairy tale as if it was like a spontaneous story.
Fun.
But they like very carefully prepared them ahead of time. So a lot of these fairy tales, you know, became very popular in Paris at the time. And this eventually, you know, influenced Charles Perrault that I mentioned before, as well as Villeneuve. So like we saw in the Beauty and the Beast story, the authors of these fairy tales, they would change the stories from the folk tradition. They would make characters at minimum a member of the gentry or the aristocracy by birth. So that was why like Beauty is the daughter of a merchant in like most subsequent versions, but in that original, she is like a secret princess.
Yeah.
So that it's okay that she's marrying a prince.
Sure.
and then the, right. So like the heroes and heroines of the fairy tales in this tradition would be like, they would be like disguised as shepherds and shepherdesses, but they were like secretly royal or noble. Right. So,
yeah.
So that's kind of where that idea came from, that Beauty had to be like a secret noble woman.
Yeah.
So it was also influenced by earlier stories such as the Greek myth of Cupid and Psyche, which appeared in writing, at least in the 2nd century AD.
Yeah.
And there's also an Italian fairy tale published in the 1550s called The Pig King that has very similar story points and themes. Variants of the tale are known all across Europe.
Yes.
So in France, like I haven't mentioned it. I talked about it in our in our dramatic reading for our Patreon. But there is a play based on the original story called Amor por Amor, which is written in 1742 and is based on Villeneuve's version.
Okay.
And it's, I think it's still pretty popular, actually.
Okay.
But according to researchers at universities in Durham and Lisbon, the story, like the kind of like basic story, originated at least 4,000 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's been around a long time.
Yeah.
But we have like, there are like different variations or different like related stories.
Yeah.
Like Cupid and Psyche, like I mentioned.
Yeah.
East of the Sun, West of the Moon is a Norwegian story that has similar elements. And it also has elements of Cupid and Psyche as well.
Yeah.
But then you have stories like The Frog Prince, which is, you know, a young human woman has to transform a, you know, a man who's been turned into, you know, something that's not a man. And she has to save him.
It's up to her somehow to
And then also, I think the story of Bluebeard has some similar elements. Mm-hmm. And they also, the Disney version of Beauty and the Beast also has kind of an element of Bluebeard in it.
Okay.
Because there's that whole thing about she's not supposed to go in the West Wing, which in Bluebeard, there's that whole room that Bluebeard's wife isn't supposed to go into.
Okay.
Where he's hiding all the bodies. You know what I mean?
Geez.
You know the story?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are some related stories.
Yeah. Rhonda, is it safe to say that the Disney version was your first foray into Beauty?
We skipped our first experience.
Was it the Disney
version?
So
it was actually, yes. And I mean, it would have been difficult to have an experience of Beauty and the Beast before then, because I was like three when the Disney version came out. So it was my first, experience with Beauty and the Beast. But then, my next, I would say like significant experience with Beauty and the Beast was reading, Robin McKinley's novel Beauty.
Yeah.
Which is a retelling from, I think that was published in like the 70s.
Okay.
So it was pre-Disney.
Yeah.
And I absolutely loved that book when I was 10.
Yeah.
I reread it recently and it has issues.
Okay.
But I loved it. I mean, it's still really good.
Okay.
But yeah, I loved that book. So I would say that was my first kind of deeper foray into Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, sure.
Was that novel. What about you?
I was obsessed with this movie when I was little, which we'll get to it, but bothers me deeply to my core. I had like an audiobook version of a children's book they made the movie into a children's book, like the Disney movie printed a children's book that they then made into an audiobook. And I would listen to that every time I was in the car.
Was it like the read along thing? And like when you turn the page, it goes,
Okay. We listened to that a million times. And then I loved all the songs in it. And then as a musical theater nerd, I was also in love with the Disney Broadway version.
Sure.
And
well, the original like animated version, they wrote as if it were a Broadway musical.
Yeah.
So.
And then they made it a little bit, the like when it went to like Broadway, they added some more mature songs like for Belle to make her a little bit more of a heroine. And like she is very much in the Disney, but they gave her songs which allowed her to be more pensive about the whole thing.
Well, and also in her motivations in the Disney version are not as like clear.
Right.
Like she's like, I want more than this provincial life, but like what is that? What does that mean?
Right.
Yeah.
And then in the Broadway they give her a song that's called Home when she decides to stay. She said it's basically, this is terrible, but I have to do this for my father. And then just some other stuff. You also get like the character of the Beast kind of finds his heart in the end of the show through the songs he gets to sing and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, that was my relationship with... I loved this so much. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I think we just, like, talked about it this morning at coffee, how, like, Belle was a very strong influence in Absolutely. Shaping our personalities as yeah. children. And, like... her, you know, being strong and but also being like being smart and loving, you know, loving books
yeah.
and stories. Like I felt like that like said to me that it was okay to like books.
Yeah.
It was okay to
yeah.
like reading
yeah.
and, you know, to want to explore and to be curious about things.
Right. Yeah.
And I think Belle, you know, was a you know, kind of a big influence in
absolutely
in shaping that part of my personality.
Yeah.
For me, better or worse.
Right. For me too, it was that all of her songs in the Disney show are so fun to sing. And yeah. I had a vocal coach who worked on these songs with me. So they became part of my identity, like as an artist as well, mm-hmm. which was really interesting. Yeah. Anyway, that was my really, really, really deep connection yeah. to this show.
I'm glad you brought that up because I totally forgot to talk about our first experiences. So
it was kind
good
of
thing you remember.
I almost didn't because I kind of felt like it was obvious. Like we both right. would have. The entry level is certainly sure, yeah. the Disney show.
Yes, but it is a good entry point.
Yeah.
If you yeah. And at this point, like, who hasn't seen it, right?
Yeah, totally.
Like, you've either seen, like, the animated one of you, or you've seen the 2017 live action, which is basically a shot-for-shot remake of the animated one.
Right.
For better or worse.
For better or for worse.
And we can talk about that in a little bit.
And we will.
yeah. So, I wanted to ask this question about why Beauty and the Beast is still a really popular story.
Right. Because
I think, I'd probably say that, like, Cinderella is the most popular.
Okay.
I don't know if you, but I think Beauty and the Beast comes in a close second.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, like, is it just because of Disney that it's so popular?
Right.
I don't remember a time before the Disney version existed.
Well, I don't either.
So I don't know.
And as a young woman turned, you know, 20-something-year-old woman, I only know it through my identity as a female-identifying person. And I certainly know that Belle meant a lot to me, and that's why
yeah.
it stayed in my life. And a lot of our mutual friends and my friends that I grew up with all kind of felt the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I really wonder how it felt, like, if it were significant before.
Right.
You know?
Well, and we have, like, so there are a couple things that we're planning to talk about, like the novel that I mentioned, Beauty,
yeah.
was published in the 1970s.
Yeah.
Before the Disney one existed.
Sure.
And then we'll also, like, we'll mention like the 1980s TV series of Beauty and
right.
the Beast, which didn't really follow
okay.
like the story. It's just kind of like a loosely inspired.
Yeah.
But again, like, that was before the Disney version. So
yeah.
And maybe if we have older listeners that remember a time before 1991, they can
let us know.
They can let us know, like,
was
if
this
Beauty
important
and the Beast
to you?
Was
yeah.
was, you know, so present in public consciousness before Disney
yeah,
took it.
Totally.
Yeah, that's yeah, that's interesting. But why do we think so? Disney version aside,
yes.
What about the story itself do you think is so enduring and so universally kind of
yeah.
beloved?
You know, it's really weird because I now have a really hard time with this content, you know,
yeah,
as
same.
Yeah. So I'm almost like, not embarrassed, but I just feel like I wish this hadn't been as huge in my life, you know, like, because I don't think I don't think that the story is a good one necessarily. And I don't think it's something I'll talk about this later, but I don't think it's really something I would talk about with my kids or in my classroom or, you know, with any of the kids that I kind of mentor or whatever. I don't think it's good content.
Yeah, it needs to be like framed in just the right way.
Sure, sure.
There needs to be like a conversation about it.
Yeah. Like,
because I think that there is value in the messaging of it that, sure, you know, just because a person looks a certain way on the outside, mm-hmm, doesn't mean that the inside matches that.
Yeah, certainly.
So there's a whole conversation you can have about judging some people by appearances and why you shouldn't do that.
Certainly.
And there's also a whole conversation about the beast and how he grows as a person
and second chances he's made, right, really bad
and
choices,
yeah, and like, yeah, redemption, mm-hmm, and yeah, second chances and kind of the growth that he goes through.
Sure. Yeah, those are all really valuable things. I think that's probably like what I gravitated toward, like, as, and also it's how Belle responds to Gaston.
Yes.
You know, but then that goes back to the Disney. So I can only really, like, I was heavily influenced by the Disney.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I mean, if we're going by just, you know, kind of the positive messaging in the Disney version, like we were talking about with Belle, with her being independent and,
yeah,
and, you know, being like, she's not fooled by Gaston's,
no,
you know,
no.
Facade, and she, you know, is intelligent and she is like proud of being intelligent, and,
yeah,
and like, it's okay,
yeah,
for her to be smart and for her to not conform with what,
yes,
everybody else thinks she should do.
Certainly.
So, I mean, that's a positive as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, in the original story, if I'm thinking about like what about the original story appeals to me, I think it is that aspect of like redemption and kind of like,
yeah,
love being that positive force for transformation.
Sure.
Yeah. I think like that's, you know, it kind of gets into like a spiritual kind of,
yeah,
you know, and, you know, I'm like, I guess I'm like, I'm a religious person, and, you know, I feel like there is that kind of like spirituality in there, that
certainly,
that love can be a positive force that transforms,
yeah,
you know, someone's, you know, someone's personality or someone's heart or whatever,
certainly,
whatever you want to call it. I don't want to get like super like religious in here, but
yeah,
but I think that is an aspect of it that appeals to me, that kind of redemption arc.
And it almost, for me, it harkens back too to the conversation we had around Pride and Prejudice about there is one person who will understand you, even, mm-hmm, if no one else really does,
right,
you know? Yeah. If you have any thoughts, you know,
tell us why.
Tell us why this matters to you, or why it doesn't, or,
right,
why you don't like it.
Or why we're totally wrong on this.
Yeah.
If you want. Yeah. So, but, you know, speaking of that Disney version,
sure,
we do have some other, film and TV, adaptations or retellings.
Yeah. Yeah.
That, you know, are pretty popular. So, I mentioned that 1980s TV series,
which I am curious about.
Yeah, yeah. It's on Amazon,
okay,
Prime. You can watch it. And it's starring Linda Hamilton from,
oh,
The Terminator.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
And George R. R. Martin was a writer and producer
on that
show.
That breaks my mind. Right? I like, can't with that.
So we would not have Game of Thrones without...
without Beauty and
without
the Beast.
Without this 1987 TV series of Beauty and the Beast.
How funny.
And then we've got the 1991 animated version.
I didn't realize this came out the year I was born. That's,
yeah,
so funny.
It's the same age as you.
That's hilarious.
And then we have... I put this one in here. The Beautician and the Beast. Have you seen no. that? It's with Fran Drescher.
What?
And she's, yeah. And so she is, she's like a beautician in New York. And she, I forget how it happens, but she somehow ends up being like the like nanny slash tutor for the children of this Eastern European dictator guy.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. So it's kind of, yeah. So it's like kind of Beauty and the Beast, but it's also kind of the nanny.
Yeah.
Because it's a gesture. Was this or like the Sound of Music.
Right. Like, was this before or after she worked at a bridal shop in Flushing, Queens?
It was like around the same time, I think. Oh, 97. Wow. I think that was like right when.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then Mr. it's also. Sheffield. Yes, exactly.
I love her.
Yeah. So that's also like, I mean, it's not super Beauty and the Beast. It's like a little bit. But okay.
They
I mean,
just liked the name.
They just liked the
yeah.
title.
Yeah.
And then we have 2011's Beastly, which we recorded a commentary for today.
That is a movie.
It is. There are choices.
There were choices there. That were made.
There were choices. It is a film.
It is, in fact, a film.
That was filmed.
That was filmed.
And if you are a Patreon subscriber,
yeah,
you can check that out, our commentary for it. So, yeah.
It's a very interesting movie.
Yeah. I feel like I like the idea of what they were possibly trying to do. Uh-huh. It just didn't quite.
Yeah.
I mean, it is based on a YA novel.
Sure, sure.
It
kind of gets caught in what I like to call the 2011 trap, where
right.
the style is just bananas yeah. to see now. It's just like.
I really like the late 2000s, early 2010s was a very interesting time.
Very interesting stylistically, time. Yeah. So
we could talk about Beastly
for
all day.
Yeah.
But we also have a TV series from the 2010s called Beauty and the Beast.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is like, was like very loosely inspired by the 1980s.
Okay, did that come
series.
Out 2010? That feels like it just 20, came out.
2012 was the first season.
Okay.
I think, I don't know how many seasons there were, but.
Okay.
But it's with Kristen Kreuk
yeah.
from Smallville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at that point I remember thinking, and this is a judgment, but I remember just thinking, why? Why do we, come on.
Yeah, it was on the CW, which kind of tells you everything you need to know, I think.
Because it was right around the time that Beastly came out. So
yeah,
I remember
that's true.
Just thinking, okay.
Is Beauty and the Beast like
what?
Okay.
I was confused. Anyway.
Yeah. And then we watched like a good chunk of the 2016 French version
yeah,
of Beauty and the
liked
Beast. It was
that
really,
a lot.
Yeah, really well done. It sticks really close to the original story.
Yeah.
Kind of embellishes a little bit, but yeah, I was really, I think, yeah, I'm going to finish watching that. I don't know what I'm saying.
It's very pretty. Like,
yes.
They had a big
very
budget.
Pretty.
Like,
yeah.
I almost wasn't listening to the content because it was so
just watching
pretty.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. So if you ever just need like to zone out to something, it's pretty.
And it is also, I think it is like the English audio is dubbed.
Uh-huh.
So that gets a little weird sometimes. Yeah. Like I would prefer that they had just done subtitles, honestly.
Absolutely.
Like weird.
Because French is a pretty language too. And it would be yeah. fun to listen to. Anyway.
Anyway. But then.
Then.
We come to 2017. Aaron has thoughts.
Have thoughts and opinions and feelings in regards to the 2017 Disney live action remake.
It was a shot for shot remake.
I just.
There's nothing new.
And there were like.
It was just like a worse version.
And, you know, again, as a musical theater nerd. Could they not have found anyone in the Broadway community to sing Belle?
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, sorry, sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
If it's a
or
musical.
Or even like if they wanted to go with a recognizable Hollywood name, there are
yeah.
Hollywood actresses yeah. who are good singers.
On the one hand, No, you know what? No, I can't. You guys, if you give me, like, it was a real Sweeney Todd movie scenario. If you give me a musical that I've loved my whole life and the person can't sing, I get sad. Like, why? Why?
Or like Russell Crowe in Les Mis.
Why? Why? Sorry, Harry Potter nerds. Hermione shouldn't have played Belle. I love her. She's great. An activist. She's amazing.
Yeah. I think she's a really good actress. That just wasn't the role for her.
I think she's an incredible human and humanitarian. But if it's a musical, you got to sing. That's all I'll say.
Yeah.
I'm done.
You do.
Mic drop.
I don't even know what I'm doing. Sorry, guys.
Like an 80s like sitcom bass line.
Like Seinfeld. Yeah, like bow, 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 bow. Let's cut to the comedy club.
Exactly.
Wow. We have been recording all day, you guys, and this is fun. So
you're welcome to thank us. It's we are.
But you know who I thought would have been perfect as Belle?
Who?
Lily Collins.
Yeah.
She looks exactly like the cartoon version.
Totally.
Of Belle.
Totally, totally.
And she can sing, so.
Get a singer.
Yeah.
Find it should have been her. Singer.
Yeah. We're not bitter or anything.
No.
That's fine. You guys, I mean, my phone didn't ring.
We're both so. Singers.
Where was my phone call, Disney?
Come on. Disney.
Oh boy.
Did you want your first six foot Belle? Did you want that?
Did you want a redheaded Belle?
Because
I would not dye my hair.
No.
Although I have dyed my hair before. I've dyed my hair brown to be Belle for Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was cheaper than buying a wig. Anyway.
Life lessons. October is coming up. You can thank us for these lessons.
Yeah, you know, you just get like the, like a $6 box of Revlon hair color.
That's how I exist as a human. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Pro tip. So
it's fun.
So we talked about movies. Let's talk about novels.
Belle likes those.
She does.
She likes to read.
She does. And yeah.
Except she keeps reading the same book, which. Okay.
Yeah. I feel that on such a deep level.
No,
though.
I know. But you've read more than one.
True. Well, I think it's kind of implied that she's read every single book in the bookshop. Oh. Like she's just been borrowing them and bringing them back.
Yeah
I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway.
I feel like I'm going through a breakup with this, because this used to be my favorite Disney movie and now I'm so upset about
and
it.
And we just keep talking about the Disney incarnation rather than the original story. Sorry, Gabrielle Suzanne Vernov. I know you're listening from wherever you are.
She's a producer on this episode.
Yes. She's a sponsor as well.
Yeah.
Where were we going with this?
We are talking about novels.
Novel retellings of Beauty and the Beast. Cool. Well, I mentioned Beauty by Robin McKinley.
Yeah.
And this was like, this legit was my favorite book when I was 10.
Yeah.
Until Ella Enchanted.
Aw, I loved that book.
Yeah, so I think if you like Ella Enchanted, I think you'll like Beauty. It is a middle grade novel that stays pretty true to the original story. And it's also, it brings in some kind of like darker elements. Like there's not like super dark because it's for kids.
Yeah.
But it brings in kind of like a more introspective, like thoughtful look at Belle's life or Beauty's life before, before she goes to live at the castle, and then kind of like her exploration of like what, you know, kind of what it means, like what beauty means and what.
That's nice.
Yeah, it gets really interesting.
Especially for like 10-year-old girls. Yeah. That's a nice time to be thinking about that, you know?
Yeah. And then she wrote another Beauty and the Beast retelling called Rose Daughter.
Okay.
That diverged from the story.
Okay.
Quite a bit. And I don't want to say too much about it because that would be like spoiling it. Almost.
Is it good though?
It's good.
Okay.
Yeah, it's real good.
Okay.
Beastly.
Yes. Which I guess we should have just done this episode on
Beastly. We should just do the whole episode on Beastly.
Because there's enough there.
But the book is like, I read the book before the movie came out.
Okay.
But it was like in that kind of time around Twilight when,
yeah,
when like there was a lot of like young adult fantasy romance novels that were kind of riding that wave, that Twilight wave.
Yeah. Does the book make sense? Because the movie often does
not. I feel like it did.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
I mean, granted, I read this like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like it did.
Okay.
But there are entire sections of the book that are just like text messages.
Okay.
With like emoticons. Which, like, you know, they're trying to be, like, relevant for the kids or whatever.
I'm ready for that trend to stop. We got it. An emoji does not belong in my book page. Let's just... No, thank you.
But, I mean, like...
I know we have to, like, be true to our times or whatever. But I'm just still really bitter about this whole Disney thing. And I'm just gonna say no to emojis in my books.
It's fine. Mm. Erin, calm down.
No.
Shh. It's okay.
It's okay. No.
It's okay. I'm patting her face right now.
No. You can't see.
Okay.
We're really fun
moving
today,
on.
You guys.
Moving on.
It's been a weird week. Has anyone else? It's been a weird week for like everyone I know. So anyway.
It's really weird.
So.
What's the next one? I put a lot on this list.
There's a lot of...
I am a sucker for a Beauty and the Beast retelling.
Uh-huh.
I think I've talked about this before. So I put a whole bunch on here because I've read a lot of them, you guys.
A Court of Thorns and Roses sounds really interesting.
Oh, yeah. That one is interesting. So so it's actually like part Beauty and the Beast, but also part this Scottish folktale called Tamlin.
Oh, okay.
So it like combines both of them. It's pretty interesting.
Is it for like a 10-year-old or is it for like
older? No, it's like for like at least 18-year-old.
Yeah, look at yeah. Cool. I'm looking for things to read. So
yeah, that's a good one. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I would not give that one to a 10-year-old. There's some adult content in there. So
yeah.
I don't remember that one very much, so I won't talk about it.
Okay.
This one, Cruel Beauty by Rosamund Hodge.
Okay.
I have a signed copy, you guys.
Yeah, she does.
And I have met the author, and we talked for 5 minutes about the City of Brass.
Yay! Okay.
And it's great. And that one's interesting. Cruel Beauty kind of brings in elements of like Greek and Roman mythology as well.
That's
so
cool.
Yeah,
okay.
So it's pretty cool.
Because these are themes present very much
right.
in Greek and Roman. Yeah, totally.
Totally. Yeah, like that going back to like the Cupid and Psyche myth.
Yeah, yeah.
Like is very much in there. The Beast's Heart is one I read for book club.
Okay.
So that was when we did Storytelling Month.
Okay.
So that one is told from the Beast's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't really diverge from the original story in terms of like the setting or anything or you know, like the story. Except Beauty only has two sisters in that. So,
yeah.
But I mean like the most popular versions now, I think she has two sisters, But yeah, it's told from the Beast's perspective, so it's really interesting.
Cool.
There are like whole passages where he's just getting like really introspective and philosophical and So, and it's, which seems like it could get dry and boring, but it doesn't.
I kind of
like,
love that stuff.
Yeah. It's really good. And then I put Uprooted on this list. So this isn't really... I don't know what I was thinking when I put it on here. I mean, it's kind of like Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
There's like a little bit of that element in there, but it's a, I should not have put it on there.
Okay.
I don't know what I was thinking, but it's good.
Okay.
If you want to read it,
yeah,
you should read it.
Yeah.
Because it's good.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, Erin, you should talk now because I've been talking for a long time.
So there are some echoes and descendants of this story, one of which, again, as a musical theater nerd, came up a lot in my life, is The Phantom of the Opera. It's a very, you know, similar story about this woman, Christine Daae, who is joining in the world of the opera. She's entering into everything. Exactly. And she's not even originally like the star, and then they hear her and they're amazed and blah blah blah, but she's also like taken over by this phantom of mm-hmm. the opera, and he's even creepier. Like, you see, he's the Beast character, obviously.
Sure.
And in Beauty and the Beast, I'm contrasting the two Broadway, so the original Broadway Beauty and the Beast.
Have you read the novel?
No.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. I'm just going off of the musical.
Just the musical.
So in the musical of Beauty and the Beast, Beast is given a heart eventually, and you see him as a human. In the Phantom of the Opera, oh my goodness, no thank you. This guy is just an abuser.
He's just a terrible person. Yeah.
And kind of ruins her life. Yeah. So.
But it's framed as like romance.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, people still think.
Deeply
like,
troubling.
Like, the music of the night, and like is seen as his, as the Phantom of the Opera's like rationale behind his actions. And you're supposed to go, oh, he loves her, when really it's really, really, really abusive. Really, like, spoiler alert, you guys, it's really, really abusive. And he like gets in the way of her being with other people, and he takes over her mind and kidnaps her. So anyone who like sees a Facebook meme of like a lyric from Phantom of the Opera on Valentine's Day,
oh, gross,
and thinks like, ah, romance. No.
No.
No. No.
No.
No. Anyway. Okay. Yeah.
Cool.
And then there's also.
I like that. I like that you talked about that.
Yeah.
Because I pretty much just threw that in as like, oh, this is kind of like it.
It's.
And I was thinking of the novel, but yeah, obviously the Broadway musical.
It's almost like Phantom of the Opera is for adults, and Beauty and the Beast is that story for children in the Broadway world a little bit.
Okay.
Because if we're again, I'm just talking musical theater, which I could do for the next 30 hours. But
should start another podcast about musical theater.
Oh, don't even. I would.
You should.
Gosh. I would have a lot of fun. But and I'm unemployed, so hey. But I only say that because in Beauty and the Beast on Broadway, you get songs like If I Can't Love Her, sung by the Beast, when he's become a good person, and really, and the love that we were talking about has changed him, and he's become a good person because of Belle, which again, shouldn't have been up to her, but she made that change for him, you know, she was the catalyst. And he sings this really sweet song like, I was living my life incorrectly, and if I can't have her, then I don't.
If I can't have you, I don't want nobody, baby. Oh my God. You're welcome.
All to say that I really like how the Beast is given kind of, and in the Disney cartoon as well. I know I keep talking about Disney, but he's really given.
It's hard to avoid, honestly. It's fine.
He turns like. He really does get to be an evolved human.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. I thought of The Shape of Water when we were talking about like echoes or descendants.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
So it it's a young woman who falls in love with like a fish creature.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's like reverse Little Mermaid. I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
But it's also, I mean,
does the fish talk?
That, no, he communicates.
Okay,
but he doesn't.
Sure,
speak.
Valid. Yeah, valid.
But, yeah, but it's like that kind of just that echo we have in culture, in, you know, storytelling in our culture of a beautiful young woman falling in love with an ugly creature of some kind.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which happens quite a bit.
Sure.
In our stories. Like, well, not that one. No.
Well, Christine Daae has to be beautiful.
Yeah,
which
that's
is
true.
Annoying.
Yes. You do not owe the world beauty.
No.
Ladies.
No one.
Okay.
You have to be nice to people, but you don't have to be pretty, because yeah. Who cares,
Right. Anyway. Okay. Anyway. Okay. And then another. I like that analysis. So
just I like to another, keep it accessible.
Another couple stories that I thought of could be very distant echoes of this Beauty and the Beast story are Jane Eyre and Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, totally.
So Jane Eyre, I think, kind of captures that darkness that's in that original story. And, you know, Mr. Rochester in like recent Jane Eyre adaptations, they've cast like really good looking actors. But Mr. Rochester is not supposed to be good looking. He's supposed to be ugly. Like, it says he's
so
ugly.
Exhausted by that.
Yeah. And I mean, he is a terrible person.
Yep.
Who through tragedy hopefully learns to be a better person. But Jane loves him anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he also has a wife that he keeps locked in the attic. So that's a pretty...
Oh my goodness.
It's a pretty terrible thing to do.
I'm coming in without any prior knowledge of Jane Eyre.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's terrifying.
I think you would like Jane Eyre.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't... The writing's a little...
Yeah.
Hard to get into. I'm sure it's wonderful and beautiful, and I'm sure it has wonderful literary merit.
And I mean, it does
merit.
Spend, like, the entire first, like, third of the book. She's a kid, and she goes through, like, terrible experiences.
Yeah, that's where I kind of dropped.
Yeah, that part's tough to get through. So a lot of times when I reread, I skip that part.
Sure, certainly. Yeah. I tried to read it when I was, like, 17, and I just didn't. Dude. I didn't care.
Right.
I didn't, like... Like, I understood what was happening, but, like, I got my literary excitements from other classics.
Like Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which, so Pride and Prejudice, you can read it as a Beauty and the Beast story.
Yeah.
And if we had, like, thought about this, like, before we decided what works we were going to talk about for Literature Summer, we could have done Beauty and the Beast and Pride and Prejudice, like, back to back, so that it would be more, but, I mean, whatever. Hamlet can just be in the middle there.
Well, as someone who identifies as Mr. Darcy.
Right, you are Mr. Darcy.
I'm happy to be a source of knowledge.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, moving forward.
Cool. But I also put Pride and Prejudice on here because I wrote this post on my blog like 3 years ago that was about what if Disney princesses were Jane Austen heroines. So it was like casting Disney princesses and I cast Belle as Elizabeth Bennet.
Yeah.
Because like they're both, you know, well, you guys can like go read my blog.
Go read her blog. She's really good. Yeah.
It's great. Yeah, so those are kind of like, I don't know, did you have any other like popular stories that you see that kind of echo a Beauty and the Beast?
I always think, I know you guys, please, I know it's mostly about Wizard of Oz, but Wicked reminds me of it.
Yeah,
a lot. Just because, you know, Elphaba, the Wicked Witch of the West, the Green Girl. Is told, like, everyone tells her she's evil, she's wicked, she's the Beast. And then she eventually winds up with the popular kid turned soldier hero, Fiero. So he is kind of the Belle character and she's the Beast character. But again, only, and I'll talk about this a little later, but only through these arbitrary labels we give people. So in truth, we meet Elphaba in college and she's very much the Belle character, mm-hmm. and Fiero, her the popular guy, is very much the Beast, but mm-hmm. then society labels them opposite.
Oh, okay.
So it's very much like a societal
judging by appearances.
Elphaba is very Elphaba fights for what she believes in, so she's very much like ostracized and told that she's wrong when really she's just fighting for a world that she wants to be better for everyone.
Sure.
But yeah, society labels them opposite of what they actually are. And then they, similar to Beauty and the Beast, the Disney, they find each other and like...
Yeah, I'm like not familiar with Wicked at all.
Yeah, it's really good. I'm obsessed. Yeah.
Well, I'll go see Wicked and you can read Jane Eyre.
Deal.
Deal. Did you have any others?
I mean, I'm sure that there's...
Oh, pick up these ones?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So I just had a few Rory and Jess from Gilmore Girls, okay. At least in the Which beginning.
They're kind of Elizabeth and Mr. Darcy.
Yeah. So it's kind of similar. I see that. And then Michael Scott as Belle and Jan Levinson as the Beast. Uh-huh. Especially in the dinner party episode.
Oh, my gosh.
I definitely think Michael Scott takes it on himself to fix Jan.
Yeah.
And she's...
Before he even like realizes that she needs quote unquote fixing.
Yeah.
That's like his thought.
And it's also kind of a play on these ideals of beauty. Like Michael Scott doesn't believe at first Michael Scott does not believe himself to be worthy of Jan,
right? And he thinks it's because of how he looks
and how she looks, and
she clears that up for him and says no, it's because of your personality.
Yeah. And I think I would argue that this is where you kind of see Michael Scott begin his arc from kind of insufferable at the very beginning to kind of more endearing. Like I love Michael Scott by the end. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, we're rooting for him by the end.
Absolutely. And in those first few episodes you really don't. He's awful.
He's awful.
And I think you really start to see that as he is so caring for Jan and kind of works through.
And that's kind of the midpoint of his arc is when he's with Jan.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like when he's starting to shift.
Yeah.
So we need to do an episode on The Office, Erin.
You guys, it would be like 24 hours
it
long.
It would be so long.
We love that show.
Oh my gosh. But that kind of like leads into this idea that I had been ruminating on, which is like also kind of hearkening back to, I just used the word hearkening casually, you guys. hearkening back to... the version of the story after Villeneuve died and how it was kind of retold as a morality story.
Yep.
But it's the idea that's kind of still present in a lot of like romance fiction that, or at least like fiction that has a romance storyline.
Yeah.
That, usually a man, not always, but usually a man who is like kind of wounded or like damaged, mm-hmm. in like quote unquote damaged, sure. in some way
by some
or
is, label
right
of society.
Or is like cruel or is just like mean, that he can be fixed or saved by the love of a good woman. That's a direct descendant of de Beaumont's de Beaumont's reworking of the story, of framing it as a tale for young women that are facing arranged marriages.
Sure, sure.
You know, with the message being that your husband might be, a quote unquote beast or be, gruff or mean or even downright abusive. But if you just love him anyway, it will be fine. So it's kind of taking that idea that I love about the story, that love is transformative and love can, bring like redemption and kind of not corrupting it. That sounds so sinister, but like kind of turning it on its head and putting the onus for that on the person who is already a good person and saying like, now it's your responsibility to change this person,
right,
and make them into a good person.
Like they're making the choices, but you are suddenly like responsible for it somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. And
Which also happens, let's be, in Sex and the City with Carrie and Mr. Big.
Yeah.
Very much a Beauty and the Beast thing. Sure. You know? Ugh. Anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah. But, you know, I kind of, you know, this is kind of an idea that we see in, not just in like romance stories, but in just fiction in general that has a romance storyline, like in The Office even.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's like, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I'm sure there are storylines in, you know, other popular TV series where.
Certainly.
You know, yeah. Someone, you know, or what about like Mindy and Danny from the Mindy Project, uh-huh, and how, yeah, she,
yeah,
like basically,
yeah,
with kindness and bubbly attitude, yeah, like turns him into a nicer person.
Sure. Right? Or even though, you guys don't get mad at me, even though I love this character, April and Andy.
Sure.
You know, yeah, like even though it's
they kind of bring out the best in each other.
They help each other.
That's a little bit healthier than.
Certainly. Like so April is not a bad person. She's just trying to keep the world out, and Andy teaches her
how to let the world in.
Life is kind of fun. Yeah, yeah. Totally.
But oh man, this section's gonna be heavy, guys.
Yeah.
So I called it Falling in Love with Monsters: The Psychology of Beast and Beauty Stories.
Yeah.
So
also, you know, trigger warning, if this, yeah, is something you're not, right, interested in hearing right now, you know, fast forward.
Yeah.
We understand.
Yeah, it is. So, and I mean, this is even something that people have brought up about the Disney version, which ostensibly, certainly, is for children.
Certainly.
About how Belle has like Stockholm syndrome because,
sure,
the Beast is holding her there against her will.
Sure.
And she falls in love with him anyway. And that's, you know,
coping mechanism.
It's problematic. Yeah. For sure. And, you know, we can kind of look at stories about, whether in real life or in fiction, stories about, you know, it's usually a woman with a male, yeah, abuser.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens the other way around as well.
Of course. Of course.
But that is like something that, it's, you know, women do kind of get into that sense that like, at least like in stories that I've heard of women who are, you know, are in abusive relationships, that they, you know, they just keep thinking, oh, like if I, you know, I can help him. Like if I stay with him, then I can help him and he can get better, yeah, and it'll be okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to like,
sure,
you know, I'm definitely not an expert on that. Like I'm not a counselor or a psychologist, certainly, or anything, but that is kind of something that goes back to that idea.
Yeah.
That, you know, that has been, you know, that people have tried to like tell young women since the 18th century that you need to, you know, just shut up and take it, basically. That,
sure.
Yeah. And that's really, really terrible.
And we can kind of sit with that, you know, as people in 2019 and kind of think, how can we do better? Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
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 Okay.
Wow. I mean,
the Disney movie is a story for children.
Yeah, and that's kind of was my jumping off point, just because my background was with the Disney film. And, you know, as an educator of early minds, I can't help but look at stories that are that are repackaged for children as potentially problematic.
Yeah. Yeah,
certainly.
A lot of fairy tales are like that.
Yeah.
Like they're... They're super dark.
And that was, as we've talked about in other episodes, that was very much the point at,
right,
some point, was to make sure that they didn't wander off into the woods, or that they listened to their elders, or else this really, really scary real thing is going to happen to you, which was necessary when we all lived like in these tiny little settlements.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much now. Not,
right,
so much in 1991 with the Disney cartoon version. We didn't need that motive anymore. So I just kind of highlighted a few kind of awful trains of thought that I saw in the cartoon specifically. So first of all, as we talked about, women must get married and frankly should not be reading this much.
Right.
We don't want women to be independent thinkers or...
just getting ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, because that in the very first opening song... it's the town telling Belle and her dad that they're right. strange for being intelligent specifically. So the dad's an inventor. Belle reads a whole lot. And so they label her...
with a dreamy, far-off look and her nose stuck in a book.
Exactly. Yeah. They label her as, you know, nerdy or a recluse or not part of our society.
You can't sit with us.
Exactly. And she labels them in turn as stupid and provincial mm-hmm. and not worthy of a good life.
That's a little messed up.
Exactly. It gets to this. We're teaching our kids to label people. We're right. teaching, like, you're stupid, I'm smart, or she's...
or you have no imagination.
Exactly. Yeah. All super problematic things that I have seen my preschoolers do to each other because mm-hmm. of these media outlets. That's super dark, but it's true. And then I'm also going to talk about The Village.
Oh my gosh.
Spoiler alert, I'm going to give away the whole ending.
Yes.
So pause it here. Go watch it. One of my favorite campy...
we talked about it in our horror episode.
Yeah,
a little bit.
I love The Village. So...
me too.
The Village is the story of, like we mentioned earlier, a small town, or what you think is a small town, who is still living on the land and very much a small settlement of people.
Very isolated.
Very, very isolated. At the beginning of the movie, you believe that it's like... early Americas or somewhere, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, it looks like maybe the early 19th century or something.
Yeah, certainly.
Is what you assume.
And the elders run this town. And the elders
and
have
secrets.
They have a bunch of secrets. And they have told everyone that the woods that surrounds the town has these monsters, has these beasts. And that if you go to the... anyway, if you try to leave the town or if you try to have any information about these beasts or seek to be... intelligent, these monsters will come and get you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, spoilers, sorry. The elders of the town dress up like the monster.
Yeah.
And they keep the people from thinking and from doing... and this all reminds me of Beauty and the Beast, in that those opening scenes of Belle is too intellectual, her father is eccentric. I didn't even mention this. Just as a tangent, the man who comes... so just think of this. You're 6 years old. You're watching Beauty and the Beast for the first time. And the first time that you hear about mental health and you hear about the like asylums is when the scary gentleman comes to collect Belle's father.
Oh, goodness.
What an...
and I always forget that character exists.
Totally.
Until I watch it again. I'm like,
oh my goodness.
Jeez.
Like, what a terrifying way to introduce the topic of mental health to our young children.
Yeah.
Not okay at all. It tells them verbatim that the second that you think that you need therapy or anything, you are automatically evil and violent and it's scary.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's that's horrifying to me. Anyway, so back to The Village. I just needed to... make space for
that. Get that out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chew on that for a bit.
Chew on a little bit. So yeah, just the, going back to The Village, it's that idea that we need to keep people down by these labelings of each other. And it's something that we, you know, still see, and it's terrifying. And so you should watch The Village because it's really campy and fun.
I really like it a lot.
And the other cool thing is that you find out at the very end that it's not even in old times.
No, it's like modern day.
They're in like a national forest.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
And they like paid like the National Park Service to not have like planes flying over.
Yeah. How terrifying.
Yeah.
It's all about keeping that power in the same way that the Gaston would like to keep control of the village in a way. You know, like, he's right. not... He likes his status.
Right.
So he, yeah.
Well, and there's also the aspect of, so, you know, the main character of, you know, in the village, she leaves the town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, but then she, I mean, she comes back.
Yeah.
But there is kind of that aspect of, like, in Beauty and, in the Disney Beauty and the Beast, at least, there's the idea that, like, if you leave that village, there's something scary out there.
Certainly.
And
absolutely.
That's, yeah, that's, I had not made that connection. That's interesting. It's, I like that a lot.
I really, I want to, especially now that it gets closer, yeah. slightly closer to October.
We have, watch. Yeah, and we have, like, timed this perfectly because
I know.
This is now, like, the climax of Beauty and the Beast, the Disney animated version. And, you know, what has, like, only recently bothered me about this movie, among many other things. So this is, like, the climax of the movie, but Belle has no active role in the climax of the movie.
I know.
And yeah. I mean, it's her, I mean, it's the Beast story too. Like, you could make the argument that, at least in this version, the Beast is really the protagonist because he's the one that we see go through the most growth and change.
Yeah.
And it starts out with his, you know, backstory at the beginning, and it's his
yeah.
choice that kind of leads to the setup for the story.
Yeah.
So you could say he's the protagonist.
Okay.
But we've been with Belle the whole time as
yeah.
well. And we
yeah.
haven't, you know, she doesn't really get to be an active player in
yeah.
the climax of her own story.
Sure.
And that
yeah.
bothers me.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
Because she basically just, like, watches the Beast and Gaston fight, and then, like, Gaston dies. And then she just, like, cries.
Yeah, she doesn't and then, get... She doesn't get to fight Gaston. Or she doesn't, I know, you know.
What? I know. Yeah. If they would have let her just get in one punch.
One punch.
To Gaston.
Come on.
I would feel a lot better about this.
I do, having watched this, though, I do feel better. I had forgotten about the scene in the middle where the Beast gives her her own library and, like,
yeah.
starts to try.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty endearing, you know, as,
yeah.
like, a character arc. Because,
again, it's his, not just his physical transformation, but his, like,
he's changed
his,
as a person.
Yeah. His, it really is kind of, you know, on a certain level, it's a spiritual transformation because
certainly.
He's, you know,
yeah.
a moral transformation, I guess.
Yeah.
But then this guy,
he is not.
This has just turned into a commentary of I know. Disney.
Okay.
but yeah, it was so formative for my childhood.
Me too. Oh. Oh, hey.
Hey, buddy.
We're just watching the end scene.
We're just watching the end scene. And I mean, that was all of the, all of our
all
notes
really
at
have.
Least.
Yeah. We, I think, this might be our favorite episode. My favorite episode that we've done of ours.
Yeah.
I really liked it. I liked our content.
This is good.
I'm just going to pat myself on the back.
And this
and
is
Rhonda's
available
back.
To people for free?
Oh,
what?
My, oh, my
We're just
God.
Doing this because we love it, you guys.
Yeah.
But totally. If you want to support us.
Yeah.
Or and if you want, you know, bonus content that's on
If you
want to
be our lover, you got to
get,
with
our
Patreon.
Friend.
Oh.
Hey. See what you did there. Don't tell me what you want. What you really, really want. Don't tell me what you want. Wow. Okay.
That was lovely.
That was lovely. But yeah, support us on Patreon. We're in a couple of... Well, a couple of days from when this episode is available, we will be, we'll have some announcements
yeah.
that will tell you a little bit about. So like we said, this is our last episode of season one.
Yeah.
And so we'll have a little bit to tell you about season two, a little sneak peek.
Yay.
Plus, something about our next live show.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It's going to be real.
Yeah, so be on the lookout for that. And then season two,
I can't
we'll
believe
we'll be back.
Rhonda, I just want to thank you for going on this journey with me.
Oh my goodness.
It's been a lovely season
one. It has been a wonderful season one, and I can't wait for season two.
Yay!
It's going to be a good time.
Well, I hope you all had a fun lit Uricher summer.
It was lit.
As
Uricher.
It certainly was. As the leaves begin to get ready to change and as everything gets a little colder.
I already have an autumn leaf wreath on my front door. FYI.
I already have plans for my autumn wardrobe.
Oh,
it's going to be good. So enjoy that transition seasonally, and I guess we'll see you in September.
We'll see you soon.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.